Welcome to Mysterious Topics, a podcast focusing on intriguing topics deserving further scrutiny. Each episode, the hosts examine a topic, add their opinions, and hopefully pique your interest as well. Visit MysteriousTopics.com for contact information and more. Now, here are your hosts, Chuck and John.
Well, on today's podcast, we're going to be talking about Mount Shasta and some of the mysterious occurrences pertaining to Mount Shasta and some of the legends and some of the very interesting points of interest about Mount Shasta. It is in Northern California, if you're not familiar with where it is. It's part of the Cascade Range. And it's also part of the much bigger Pacific Ring of Fire, which if you go from the southernmost part on the eastern part of the Ring of Fire, it's way down in Chile and Peru and South America, and it goes up along Central America, up the western coast of North America, and it goes over through Russia and down through Japan and then goes down into the area east of Australia. So it's a very large ring of fire, and that ring of fire pertains to active or dormant volcanoes. It's the ring of fire because it's an area that's geologically very active, and many volcanoes and many active eruptions and many eruptions that have occurred years ago, and many of these volcanoes are probably no longer active. So that kind of sets it into perspective.
It's basically the rim of the Pacific. It kind of, it's like,
yes, yeah, right. You can, if you look at it on a map, you would be almost just making a semicircle in the Pacific Ocean, and that's the Ring of Fire. Mount Shasta is apparently still active. It last erupted approximately 200 years ago. Some would say that the 1786 date was the last date, but that date is not necessarily accurate. It's kind of in dispute.
To put that in perspective quickly, I just thought it was interesting, 1786. So that was only 9 years before the young man in one of our previous episodes talking about Oak Island when he was discovering that area.
That's interesting, yes. So the last time it erupted was close to that same time. That's
just 10 years after we declared independence.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. Well, apparently it erupts on average every 600 years. 10,000 years ago, it was believed every 800 years or so eruptions occurred in, but now it's apparently getting or somewhat more frequent. I don't know if that's still occurring, if they're becoming less than every 600 years. But the U.S. Geological Survey considers it a dormant volcano that will likely erupt, so that's pretty definite, in the future, and it rates it a very high threat volcano. So, have you ever been there?
I've never been to Mount Shasta. Just hearing what you just said, I don't know that I'd want to live there either, but I have been to its sister mountain, which we can get into later.
Yes, I have been to its sister mountain also, which is Mount Mazama. Is that how it's pronounced, John?
Yes, I believe so. Mount Mazama, which...
In southern Oregon?
Yes, in southern Oregon, Mount Mazama, people would know it by its what they call it today. What happened was that had a huge explosion, a volcanic explosion, and it collapsed on itself. And it's now everybody knows it as Crater Lake.
Right, which is a very beautiful lake. I mean, it's a deep blue color. I know you've been there, and I've been there, And I have a little story to tell you about Crater Lake. I was there actually in 1996, in October of 96. We stayed at the Crater Lake Hotel or Lodge or whatever it was called. So that's 18 years ago now. But you know how you remember significant things in your life, like 9/11 in 2001, and when President Kennedy was shot, if you were alive then. Yeah. For some reason, I remember what happened the night we stayed at Crater Lake in October of 96. Now, this is going to sound very quirky to many people, but to anybody that's a sports fan, and especially one that's from Wisconsin, the one thing I remember about the night we stayed there, it was a Monday night, and the Green Bay Packers were playing the San Francisco 49ers. And I, for some reason, 18 years later, the first thing I think of when I think of Crater Lake is the Green Bay Packers beating the 49ers in overtime 23-20. And that just sticks in my mind. It's just 18 years ago, and that's the first thing that I think of, even though the lake was very beautiful. And I still can picture that Wizard Island down in that deep blue water. That's that Wizard Island, which is located in Crater Lake. And I remember we were there in October, like I said, and I think 2 or 3 weeks later, the lodge closed for the winter because it was actually very cold when we were there. It was probably, well, it wasn't terrible, but it was around freezing. And for middle October, for me, that's pretty cold. What do you remember about Crater Lake, John?
Well, I remember on the drive up there, you're going up the side of a mountain, and that's kind of interesting, but you don't really get a feel for what you're in store for. But I remember going through, driving through that whole drive, and it was, like I said, it was scenic and that, but when we started getting up closer, and, you know, the one thing that's impressive in that area are the sizes of the trees. Now, I don't believe there were redwoods there, but there are huge other types of Douglas firs and that sort of thing. And it's just impressive. We don't have anything that big around where we are in Wisconsin, and those trees are just absolutely enormous. And it's almost, I guess, kind of like a rainforest in that area, how much rain they get in Oregon and Washington. But just the immense size of the forests, and just seeing that, and you know, almost a couple of times you could see where people could easily drive off the road there because of everything to see. And then when you finally get up to a point where you can see into the caldera, it's one of those moments where it really takes your breath away. You know, literally you go, because it's that impressive.
It's similar and maybe even more impressive than when you first walk up to the edge of the Grand Canyon and look down. And both of those experiences are very breathtaking, but because of the deep blue color of Crater Lake, maybe the first impression is even more vivid.
Yes, and because of the fact that not only is the water deep blue, but it's also, and I don't remember exactly now, but it's got to be at least 1,000 feet from the rim of the caldera down to the water, to the surface of the water.
It's quite a distance, I know that.
And then the water below that is up to 1,900 feet deep, I believe. So that's
a long ways down there.
Yes.
Well, apparently Mount Shasta could, if it did have some catastrophic type eruption in the future, you know, suffer or experience the same kind of collapse state that Mount Mazama did, which created Crater Lake. It's not a likely occurrence, but it's possible, according to geologists. So they're all kind of, you know, those huge mountains are kind of in the same basic, that's the way they exist. They just, you know, have the same basic geological structure underneath of them. And that, you know, the same situation could happen to them. You know, yes. Mount St. Helens is not far away north into Washington. So
right. I was just going to say that. They said that Mount Shasta, if it had a huge eruption, it would probably do the same thing, just like Crater Lake. If it had a huge explosion and it went straight up. Now, Mount St. Helens had that kind of ferocious explosion, but it went off the side and blew the whole side of the mountain off instead of the top. Otherwise, Mount St. Helens may have turned out like that.
Yes, right. So what we really are trying to center on here as far as Mount Shasta is concerned is the lore and the mysteries and the spirituality concerning the mountain. Over the years, and we're going back, apparently it's been inhabited, Mount Shasta, or the area around it, for 7,000 to 9,000 years, and that's kind of a guess, but it's been a long time. And there, ever since it was recognized, I'm sure legends and theories about what's going on in relation to the mountain have existed. Do you have anything in particular you'd like to point out about the legends pertaining to the mountain, John?
Well, the legends part, I know they have legends about, you know, the Indians, and basically their legends are about a spirit chief by the name of Skell, who descended from heaven to the mountain's summit, and Skell fought with the spirit of the below world, whose name was Lowell, and he supposedly, according to the American Indian legend, was he resided at Mount Mazama, which later turned into Crater Lake, as we said. But they were throwing hot rocks and lava at each other. So that's every time the volcano might have erupted, that's what they were saying, that these two gods were having a battle with each other.
Now, just thinking about that, you know, back in that time period, I'm sure they didn't have the geological experience or knowledge that we apparently have today. And I guess they had to put some kind of an explanation on what was going on. I mean, you see this stuff flying all over the place. Well, this can't, what's going on here? Something has to be happening. So they attribute spirits of some kind. And this is just one example, like you just mentioned, John, with Skell, who was fighting with the spirit of the below world and throwing hot rocks. So you see these things flying out of the volcano. You know, it was, I'm sure, very scary. So the people that were living in that area had to have some explanation for what was happening, and this was apparently one of them. I'm sure they truly believed it, and maybe some people, I'm sure, still believe that today.
Well, like you say, Chuck, they did. Obviously, they had to explain it somehow. People would, you know, they had no knowledge of what was really going on at the time. I think we'll run into this theme a lot in our, you know, future episodes about a lot of things that are explained in some what seems to us now a very simple manner, and we know, well, that's not what was really going on. But I think we'll see that a lot. That comes up in, you know, even modern day religion that would seem to still be explaining things in that simple a term. So,
yes, and we are, of course, dealing with mysterious topics. And when you enter into the mysterious topics realm, you're going to have people needing to explain what's going on. And if they don't know, if they don't understand what's going on, they have to come up with, in their own minds, some kind of explanation. And I'm sure they were comforted by whatever explanations that they came up with. Now, another thing about Mount Shasta. Over the years, not only were the Native Americans active in the area or living in the area, apparently there were other religious faiths or types of people that were had different backgrounds, including a Buddhist monastery. And again, many modern-day Native American rituals apparently occur yet today. Now, Mount Shasta is considered one of the seven sacred mountains of the world. And now that's kind of a stretch. I think if you do any research on the sacred mountains of the world, you're going to come up with more than just the seven that that are itemized in the seven sacred mountains of the world. However, I think it refers more to what is called more precisely the seven main earth chakras. If you do any looking about chakras, you'll see that Mount Shasta is one of the seven, and it's actually considered the root or the base of the spine. And there are seven of them throughout the world. Mount Shasta, and there's one in South America, I think in Africa, in Australia, and there's seven of them totally in the world. But Mount Shasta is considered the base in the chakras, and that has a lot to do with the lore pertaining to the spirituality and the customs that exist today. Now, that doesn't necessarily fall in line with Native Americans. These chakras are more of a Hindu symbolism, and many people today still are strongly attracted to the theories of chakras and totally believe that they exist. And many people talk about the chakras inside of a human body, and that's another use of the term chakras.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd never heard that about how are they, because the chakras in the body are lined up from the bottom or the base, which is the base of the spine, all the way up to the crown of the head. I just wonder how they determine the seven mountains. They don't line up in a from north to south, do they?
No, they don't. If you would look, it's almost like if you view like the space shuttle, how it travels around the Earth, it kind of goes in those up and down patterns, you know, throughout the whole Earth.
Yes.
And it's kind of a wavy pattern. And these chakras fall in line with the waves. And I don't know how they ever determined that Mount Shasta or the Lake Titicaca in South America is another one. And there's a solar plexus, Uluru, in Australia. I don't know who determined what they were. But in particular, Mount Shasta, it's located at the southern end of the Cascade Range. And then it runs like a dragon from Northern California through Oregon and through Washington to the Canadian border, this dragon, so to speak. And there are many powerful mountains in this range, with Mount Shasta, and like we mentioned earlier, Mount Rainier, overlooking Seattle, is the best known. But this is just one more theory about the energy system related to Mount Shasta and similar points throughout the world and throughout the United States. Do you know anything about the harmonic convergence that occurred in August of 1987, John?
No, I don't.
I can tell you a little bit about it, and I think you can probably add some things to it. Shirley MacLaine, just think about that. She was there. She was one of those individuals that was there at Mount Shasta in August of 87 at this harmonic convergence, so to speak. And you know about Shirley MacLaine and how her reputation, as far as some of her, what would you call it, supernatural beliefs, or what would be a better term than that? I know there's probably a better term. But she called Mount Shasta and the harmonic convergence, which occurred in August of 87, as a window of light, which this opportunity, supposedly, at this convergence, allowed access to a higher level of awareness. And, you know, this was a one-time event, and apparently it was just another use of Mount Shasta and its importance in these paranormal or supernatural events.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that particular one, but there have been so many stories about the Mount Shasta and sightings of I guess what you would call UFOs, some sort of objects that they're not sure what they were. There's been Bigfoot sightings, you know, you name it, everything's there, including apparently some military. Again, the military shows up, possibly having some of their activities in the area too. So there's just a whole lot of activity, and there's a whole lot of people that go there because there is supposedly some sort of energy force coming from the mountain. And so that's just all. There's all kinds of stories about that. There was one guy by the name of J.C. Brown. He was a British prospector who supposedly discovered a lost underground city beneath Mount Shasta. This is in 1904. He had been hired by Lord Cowdray Mining Company of England to prospect for gold, so that's why he was there, and supposedly discovered a cave which sloped downward for 11 miles. In the cave, he found an underground village filled with gold, shields, and mummies, some being up to 10 feet tall. 30 years later, he told his story to John Root, who proceeded to gather an exploration team in Stockton, California. That was like 80 people on the team. But on the day the team was to set out, Brown did not show up. Brown was not heard from again, ever again. So that's kind of an interesting story.
That thing about the 10-foot mummies, that kind of intrigues me. The rest of it that you just described, it's very fascinating. But the part about the 10-foot mummies, now where would that come from?
I have no idea. I don't know. And I don't know. They just say mummies. They don't. So were they like Egyptian mummies, or were they just some sort of crude, you know, burial thing, or were they actually very sophisticated like the Egyptians did? I don't know.
Okay, well then, as long as we're on these 10-foot things, let's just make a leap here and let's go to Bigfoot, since we talked about the mummies. And, you know, I think perhaps if Bigfoot does exist, maybe these Bigfoot creatures were 10 feet. Maybe they were bigger, and maybe they wrapped themselves up like mummies when they died. I don't know. Maybe some of them did.
Well, I don't think I'd touch that with a 10-foot mummy.
So you don't think the Bigfoot creatures would be sophisticated enough to do that?
I have no idea. They certainly could be, because nobody's ever really found one, dead or alive. I mean, yes, a lot of people say they've seen them alive, but nobody's brought one back for dinner and, you know, had them explain how sophisticated they are. So I guess we just don't know at this point.
Well, you know, a lot of these legends and theories I've often poo-pooed, and, you know, I thought, well, yeah, maybe, but it's interesting talking about them. But for some reason, I almost believe that there are Bigfoot creatures, you know, Who knows what they really are? I can really believe that it's possible that some big humans live in or humans or whatever these Bigfoot creatures are, live out there in, I mean, this is a big, vast wilderness out there in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. And it's like you mentioned earlier, John, the trees are beautiful and everything is just, it's just huge. It's just, everything is big. And it's a big, very, very beautiful area and a lot of places for creatures like Bigfoot to get back into and hide. And I remember reading many times about the Pacific Coast and in the area associated with the Redwoods, which, by the way, is directly, the Redwood National Park is directly west of Mount Shasta. You know, Redwoods are very close and somewhat almost on the Pacific Ocean in some case, but it's directly west of Mount Shasta. So we're in this general area where Bigfoot, if Bigfoot does exist, could be in that area.
And the other thing with it, that as long as we're talking about this type of thing, and as far as could Bigfoot exist and nobody have found one, that 11-mile long cave that he supposedly walked down, it could be just a natural cave. It would probably be a lava tube of some sort, don't you think, Chuck? 11 miles long.
Right, and I know you were in Hawaii, and you probably, did you walk inside lava tubes?
Yes.
I know I did, and so I can see how that would be possible, yes.
And there, and as long as we're going down this route now, I heard one kind of off-the-wall theory that would sort of make sense. I believe I heard this somewhere that Nassim Haramein, who's a physicist who's working on the unified field theory, and you know a lot of other physicists kind of poo-poo his ideas on that, but he's a very intelligent and you know very knowledgeable person on this sort of things, and I believe he stated somewhere about lava tubes and the fact that they've had around the edges with the lava going through it, and after it hardens, it's covered with various metals that had been melted down with the rocks enough so that, if you remember, Chuck, when we were little kids, we used to learned how to build a magnetizing little machine at school, and it's where you take an empty cardboard roll of toilet paper, wrap copper wire around it, put it on a little board, attach the copper wire to an electrical wire, and then plug it into the wall. And if you put a piece of metal inside that copper tubing and you have electricity inducted to it, it magnetizes the metal.
Well, John, you really had a scientifically oriented education when you were a little kid. I remember what you're talking about. I don't think I knew that much about it, so I'm impressed.
Yes, well, anyway, so that's what he's basically saying, is that these lava tubes here, because of that sort of orientation, if there's any kind of electromagnetic energy run through it, it could actually act as some sort of a porthole. So, you know, portal. So if there were some sort of, if these Bigfoot, let's say, were in some other dimension or something like that, it would be like an open portal. They would come here for a while and they'd go back. So therefore, nobody would ever find one because they go back inside. And there's apparently been tons of sightings in the Mount Shasta area and people have actually seen them coming out of these lava tubes or caves. So I'm just saying, I just wanted to bring that up because it's an actual sort of a scientific explanation as opposed to just some kind of, you know, yeah, we believe in Bigfoot and they're real. And, you know, it's an explanation. I don't know that any, you know, if it's a valid one or not, but it is, at least it's an explanation.
Actually, it could be valid. You know, when you were explaining it to me, I can see that on Discovery Channel and somebody explaining that, and I think, yeah, that could happen. And, yeah, so it's possible. I mean, I'm going back to this whole topic and the whole area. And like we just mentioned earlier about how people needed an explanation for what was happening that they didn't understand. And I know that whole area in the Pacific Northwest and probably a lot of areas on the West Coast and probably a lot of areas throughout the United States, but especially out there, it was a very strong, I guess you would say, hippie culture. And associated with hippie culture is a lot of experimentation with drugs of certain kind. Basically, pot would be the main one. And when you're experimenting or just using that constantly, things seem a little different than when they do when you're not using those things. And I don't want to be judgmental about who should be using that or who shouldn't, but I think that that can also be an explanation for some of the reasoning that was going on at that time.
Well, the other possibility with pot, and now I'm speaking from no experience in this because I have no experience in it, but it's possible that the THC in pot could possibly take away some of the barriers for you to not see that sort of thing. So in other words, it's not just the drug making you think you see something, but it's the drug taking away the veil so that you can see something.
Yes, that's very interesting, and that's true. And apparently you and I are the only two people in the United States that haven't done this, John. But
well, not successfully.
But yeah, I just know from observing and being around some people that have that it's hard to have a conversation with them that really makes sense sometimes. You know, but they are very, very loving. They give a lot of hugs. I know that. Anybody that's on pot usually is very outgoing and loving. So anyway, that's my thoughts on the hippie culture that is out there. The only reason I bring that up is because I think it is a factor in some of the theories and some of the lore pertaining to the area.
Yeah, well, I think that people with that sort of mind frame would be drawn to a mountain of mystical attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, that would, and also, you know, the hippie movement started right in San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury. So that's
not far away.
That's not far away. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about this forest fire, Chuck, in 1931? What do you think of that?
Well, that's very interesting. What's interesting about it to me is not, well, first let me explain it a little bit. In 1931, there was a forest fire on Mount Shasta, but it stopped from advancing, apparently rather suddenly, by a mysterious fog that arose from nowhere. Now, that part, to me, is interesting, but I've experienced fog coming out of nowhere. And I think you probably have too, John, driving, and all of a sudden you're in a clear area, and boom, all of a sudden fog is there, and you just come upon it very, very quickly.
Yes.
I don't know if that's what happened there, but so that the suddenness of the fog appearing is interesting, and it might be something mysterious, but I don't think it's really mysterious. What really was kind of interesting about that, and here we're basically making a stretch, it when the fire died off, and today apparently still, you can see the fire line demarcation of the charred damage. And this line of demarcation kind of mimics very accurately the central slash mountain time zone line. So the line that separates the central and the mountain time zone, this line that kind of zigzags down from Canada down to the far southern United States, that line is similar to the line that was created by the fire line demarcation.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I follow that. So the line, so I thought the fire was stopped from an altitude area, a ring around the mountain. Is that not true?
No, I think, I don't necessarily a ring around the mountain. I just think when they saw the line above, somebody off out of their mind looked at it and said from above, and they said, for example, if you look at it from Google Earth and look down at it, and then you look at a map of the United States where you see the central and the mountain time zone, that line zigzags the same way that line of fire demarcation does.
Okay, I don't know what significance that would
have. Well, it's one of those things that somebody noticed and just commented on, but you know.
Yeah, I'm just trying. I guess it's just one of those coincidences that happens. But unless there's something more of the story that you're trying to say that I'm not seeing.
Well, I think this is something that you would notice if you saw it, and you'd point it out because you like to notice those little quirky things.
Yeah, but hoping that it would be leading to something else. But the one thing that is that I would like to question on the fog and not being that mysterious is that I don't know. I know we experience a lot of fog at various times around here. I've never known a fog to stop a fire, though. How would it would have to be a really, I mean, a fire is, you know.
If it's a raging fire, I can't see it either. I mean, I know there's a lot of moisture associated with the fog. But it would have to be, you know, to be able to stop a raging fire. I don't see how that would happen.
Now, the other question is that when this mysterious fog showed up, was there any sign of Adrian Barbeau?
I think there might have been. I just saw her in a movie lately, and she's a little older than when I remember her from that movie.
Yes, but
what was that movie? Do you remember the name of that?
The Fog. It was The Fog.
Of course.
It was The Fog, and there was a mysterious fog would roll in, and there was some sort of ghost pirates or something that would attack people.
Yeah, I remember that well. Yeah. But no, I don't know if that was a good one. You've got your humor cap on tonight, John, or today.
I'll keep trying.
Okay, very good. Anything else on your mind here? I got a couple more things, but I thought you might have something.
Yeah, no, go ahead, because I just have, because they're sister mountains, I've got a few short little stories on the Crater Lake area, but as far as Mount Shasta, there are so many stories and legends of different things happening there. We just it would take us hours to cover it all. But if you've got a few things you want to bring up, go ahead.
Well, in part pertaining specifically to Mount Shasta, no, I think I was planning on deviating and making some comparisons to other sites throughout the United States in particular. I'm sure throughout the world too, but I was more or less trying to center on some of the different locations in the United States that have mysterious elements to their locations and some of the lore associated with it, and I was going to go into that. And first one I thought I'd mention and would be Devil's Tower. You're familiar with Devil's Tower, John, right?
Yeah, well, just a minute here. Let me write these down. These could be future shows.
Actually, as I was going through this, I thought of the very same thing. Do you know what movie was made there?
Devil's Tower? Devil's Tower. No, I can't think of it.
Richard Dreyfuss. Anyway, it was Close Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes, of course.
And so that ties in with
the mashed potatoes.
It ties in with the supernatural and the alien thoughts that we're going to. And these next few locations I'm going to mention are similar in the fact that they all have some lore associated with them and the potential for supernatural thinking surrounding them. Another one is Monument Valley, which is a Navajo area. It's near the Four Corners. Do you know what four states are associated with the Four Corners, Jack?
I was just going to say, I didn't know we had a test tonight. But, yeah, I think I can take a shot at it.
Anybody listening to can, we'll give you a minute here just to, or a few seconds to think about it before John. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado.
You are good. I got to tell you a little story about this. I'm impressed actually, because you know, you weren't looking at a map.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't prepared for that at all.
So I caught you off guard when, my wife, Mary, and our four kids, this is many years ago, we took a trip out west and we were going through the Four Corners area. And all four of our kids were arguing when we got closer to that area about who was going to be the first one to step on the Four Corners. You know, there was an actual plaque right there with the Four Corners. And they were arguing and we got closer and closer and we got there and Mary turned around and said to him, "Okay, that's it. You guys are all staying in here. I'm going to step on the Four Corners." So she got out and she didn't. So they were kind of disappointed that they weren't the first. But that was one of her parenting tricks.
Yeah.
So you were there too, apparently?
No. I've never been there. I've never been to the Four Corners monument, no.
Okay. I mean, it's nothing spectacular. It's just a plaque in the ground. But it's out there. I think it's basically in an area out of Native American lands.
I got that is I was just remembering which states were basically at right angles in those to make the corners. So
that's good thinking.
Obviously, it couldn't be Nevada or California. So,
see, I'm impressed. All right, another one I want to mention was this is actually in our own location here. Have you ever been to Devil's Lake in Wisconsin?
Yes, I have.
Okay. What are your thoughts about that? Anything? You have anything in your mind?
I didn't know of anything supernatural. We had the craziest night of our lives staying in this really goofy cabin.
I remember that. Go ahead. Tell me.
Oh, I don't want to get into that story now. All right. But it was just a nightmare scenario as far as the accommodations and the some of the other people staying there. Let's leave it at that. But yes, but the Devil's Lake area itself is very beautiful.
Oh, it is. I mean, when I was younger and as our kids grew older too, we were there many times. But as far as the lore associated with this, and some of this is apparently true, according to the natural resources personnel that were operating or are still operating the campgrounds and the park itself, Devil's Lake State Park in Wisconsin. In the summer of 1970, some of the campers, I can see you doing this, complained of shadowy, some kind of creatures prowling around in the dark. And apparently the rangers said there are no bears in the area. And I didn't realize this, but Bigfoots have been associated in some of the lore in this area. I didn't know they were that close to us, but apparently they were. And in 1889, a lake monster was reported on Devil's Lake. And on cold, still nights, in the mist on the lake, there's supposedly a phantom canoe visible. So, and then one more thing, well, a couple more things, actually. There's been reports back in the 1800s, I guess, and earlier, of an Indian maiden and her lover leaping to death. And this is a common theme in many cultures. You often hear of the Indian maiden and lovers, their lovers, you know, because they can't be together, jumping off and supposedly committing suicide. And Devil's Lake is a site of apparently many dead. That's the quote associated with Devil's Lake.
Well, what I remember from Devil's Lake was, I believe kids would go out there a lot swimming, and I know there's some high cliffs near the water that a lot of them would jump off, and every once in a while one of them would maybe hit their head on a rock under the water and drown. And also, I know that's happened more than just a few times over the years.
And yes,
I believe it's a pretty deep lake too, right?
It is, and the bluffs are very steep, and a lot of climbers will be, you know, use the bluff areas to climb. And I know there have been deaths and injuries associated with their climbing activity also. Maybe that's part of the dead, but it is a very beautiful, you're on top of the bluffs walking around the lake and looking down in the autumn when the colors and the trees, my gosh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that whole area was where the the glacier, I believe, kind of came down that far and stopped. But there's an incredible Parfrees Glen, it's called, mm-hmm. and that's not far away, and that's a must see if anybody's in the area too. You get to walk between these rocks, and you actually see fossils in the rocks from thousands of years ago. It's just it's really cool.
It's a very rich geological area. You know, geology students go on field trips there, I know, very often because of that. Another one is Mackinac Island. Do you know the movie that Christopher Reeve made on Mackinac Island?
Somewhere in Time, right?
Yes, and that is kind of a mysterious element to it.
With Jane Seymour.
Very good. You're almost as good as Roger Ebert. But there again, we're talking about some of the lore associated with another place, Mackinac. Apparently, they give tours about the lore and the mysteries associated with Mackinac Island.
What exactly was that? No, because I don't think I've ever heard any mysteries about that.
Well, you know, basically it pertains to Indian theories or Native American theories that, you know, back then they referred to them on the tours as Indian. I know I went on a tour years ago, oh gosh, probably 40 years ago, and they were talking about the Native Americans and some of the beliefs they had in Lake Superior and some of the structures around Lake Superior. And I don't remember exactly, but it had pertained to just like some of the things we were talking about earlier about Manchester when you
yes.
Just some of the things that popped up. I can't tell you exactly.
Superior, the Great Lake they call Gitchigumi.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It's an Indian. That's from Gordon Lightfoot's song.
I know. That's a good song. Yeah. Gitchigumi. I knew what that meant. What does that mean? I forgot. Somebody's going to know that, and I don't know what it means, but okay. That's the name of Lake Superior, Gitchigumi. Oh, that's another thing. As long as I'm talking about, I'm really going off the wall here today. We were up on Lake Superior. This is actually in Canada. I think there's a place called Takabetha Falls, and it's just north of Minnesota. So it's on the western edge of Lake Superior. And there's a Canadian park there, probably a provincial park. And there was a falls that goes over this huge drop. It's probably, I'm going to guess, 200 feet down where the falls drop down to the river below. And we were probably 200 feet away, but we had a good view of the falls, and this particular, the top of the falls. And I saw a German shepherd walking across the river at the top of the falls. And I actually took a picture of it. And that German shepherd slipped and fell and went down the falls right in front of our eyes.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know, I don't even have the picture anymore. This is back when we had film, and I have no idea where that is. But the owner, down at the bottom of the river, probably half an hour later, I saw him picking up the dog, and the dog was alive and carrying him away. So I'm sure some broken limbs were experienced, but that's just another. I got to quit getting off the subject here, but I keep thinking of these things, and that was just another thing that I thought.
Oh, yeah, that's one thing you'd never forget.
It's
horrifying.
Yeah. All right, three more things, and then I'll let you talk. You can talk now if you want. Do you have something you want to say?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Another one is the San Francisco Peaks, which is near Flagstaff, Arizona. And there, those peaks are apparently seen as the home of Kashina spirits. And these spirits, these dead Native Americans, supposedly became clouds after death. And, you know, it's just another example of the lore. And we're going back to these so often. In the Superstition Mountains near Phoenix, the Apaches, you know, they called it the Devil's Playground. So it's the same theme. The reason I'm going through all of these is because there's basically the same ideas associated with all of them. There's always the lore and the spirituality and the explanations for what happened. And now this next one is kind of a localized one for me, and you've probably never heard of it, but it's Saddle Mound, and it's located in west central Wisconsin. There's actually a bar named after it, the Saddle Mound Bar. But I was there when I was younger with some of my cousins who had a cabin near there, and we often talked about camping on that mountain, which isn't a mountain. It was probably, I don't know, 600 feet high, which isn't a mountain. It's just a hill. But in that area, it towered above everything else. But what I wanted to say about it, you go into town, into Pittsville or City Point, which are local, small, very small towns, and you go into the bars, almost every time you go into one of those bars and you have a beer, and that's what they talk about. They talk about the mysterious things that go on that mountain. And most of them are probably made up because somebody's drinking beer in these bars. But it's another example of how lore begins and how it builds over the years. All right, I'm done with my examples.
Okay. Well, the only other thing that I wanted to just go into a little bit was some of the stories I found on Crater Lake, that is, like we said before, the sister lake of Mount Shasta, and I just thought that it was worth noting. These two are not far away, the Mount Shasta in Northern California and Crater Lake in Southern Oregon, so they're very close together. They're like we said, the sister mountains, and Mount Shasta, with all of the various sightings, but Crater Lake is the same way, and I just thought I'd tell a couple of them. There have been many ghostly encounters there, and lots of strange disappearances. And then Bigfoot has shown up from time to time also in the Crater Lake area. The Rangers once reported following a large, dark, putrid-smelling creature through the woods until it started throwing pine cones at them. So apparently the Rangers there aren't all that tough, because he just threw a couple pine cones at them and they turned around and went away.
Yeah, you got to get stronger.
You think they would have said rocks or something, but pine cone, come on.
Darn pine cone.
Pine cone can't hurt you. Anyway, so I just thought that was interesting. Yes. And supposedly, there's claims of at least two slayings of the Sasquatch in the area. One was by a car the body was reportedly whisked away by the government. That's what they say. And the other was by a train. The train conductors didn't report slamming into something that looked like the legendary Bigfoot for fear that they'd be accused of drinking on the job. So
probably would have been.
Yeah, so they didn't say anything about how much later. So there was obviously no evidence of that one either. But there's been UFOs sighting all around the area too. In February of 1997, a jet pilot reported military aircraft pursuing UFOs above the lake. That night, a loud sonic boom was heard all across western Oregon. Strange lights make periodic appearances in the area. So, you know, just another interesting thing that these areas seem to have these kind of reports a lot. It's just interesting.
Well, you know, thinking about that, and UFOs are, in my mind, you know, a reasonable explanation for some things that we have witnessed or heard about. And they would, I would think, be attracted to landmarks, huge landmarks, such as mountains, Mount Shasta, Crater Lake, Mount Rainier, Devil's Tower, or any of these large monument type of structures. That would be something that they would see easily as they're approaching our planet, and I can see why that would be an attraction for them.
It could be, yeah. There was also a Native American tribe in the area called the Modoc tribe, M-O-D-O-C, who lived on the borders of around Crater Lake for 1,000 years or more. They knew the mountain since before the eruptions turned it into Crater Lake, and they retain a strict taboo against the place. They say it's evil, the home of dark spirits. People disappear there, what they say. So, and I imagine a lot of people would disappear there. I'm talking about after it turned into Crater Lake, but before that, when you have an active volcano, and you're wandering around on it, it's not safe. But especially after it was Crater Lake, this past week, I saw a report that they're still looking for some hiker that was trying to evade a ranger, and he fell off of the caldera, and they still haven't found him or his body.
At Crater Lake?
Yes, yes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it happens a lot there, and like we were talking before, it's way down. You get up to the rim, and you're looking down 1,000 feet until you get down to the water. So if you slip off the side,
that's it.
So again, the Indian legend saying that there's evil spirits there, home of dark spirits, and people disappear there. If you slip off the side and fall down 1,000 feet, people probably aren't going to come down looking for you. They would be unable to. People would disappear and he just would never see them again.
Yeah, that's what is your thoughts in general about the Bigfoot legend? Do you think it's feasible or it's just a bunch of hooey?
No, I think there's something out there that we haven't been able to get evidence of yet, because there's so many sightings. I just don't believe this many people would find it amusing to just make up a story that they saw something crazy. Now every time something like this happens, it's the same, with anything, with UFOs or that. A couple of people talk about it legitimately, and then all of a sudden you're going to have all kinds of people that are going to make up stories. So that's where it gets to the point where people are saying, oh, you're crazy if you saw that, because so many people that are crazy or just like to tell stories and make stuff up turn it into that. But I think in every instance when that happens, there are a few legitimate stories and people that you know when you look in your eyes, you know they're all there, they're normal, they're sincere, and they actually saw something. So I just don't know how to explain it, Chuck, unless it's until we actually get some evidence that they can explain.
Yes, that's the only thing I can. I actually want to believe it because I think it is possible that a Bigfoot type creature or creatures do exist. But you got to have there's something. They have to die sometime, and there have to be bodies unless they have some system where if one of their members dies, they all of a sudden dispose of the body some mysterious way. But yeah, I don't know, you know. But I do believe that it's possible. I don't want to totally ignore that it could be possible.
There was a gigantic Pithecus, I believe it was called, 100,000 or more years ago. There, you know, they have evidence of this creature that was 8 feet plus tall that lived. So there was something on our planet at the time when there were humans, Homo sapiens, walking around. So is it possible that they somehow were, you know, got a small band of them are still alive out in the thick wilderness? I guess it's possible.
Right. Well, okay. Another thing that we kind of talked about before with the lava tubes and the creatures, the Lemurians, I think it's called. Lemurians? That society that supposedly was thought to live perhaps deep inside, underneath Mount Shasta. Yeah. And like you mentioned with the lava tubes, and I can see people from the area going into the lava tubes and finding shelter in them and living in them. But to actually go into the center of the volcano, I mean, this volcano, it's dormant, but it's still, it's not dead. It's, you know, there's still sulfur dioxide and steam of some kind coming out of the of parts of the area of the mountain. I mean, it's hot down there. I mean, it's very hot. You can't just go and live in inside of a volcano that's at all active or at all alive. So I don't think deep inside, but I can see some creatures, you know, if you were on that area, that would be a good place to find shelter in those lava tubes.
Yeah. So Lemuria, is that associated with Atlantis in any way, or is it just a similar story?
I think it is associated with it. I'm not exactly sure.
Because they say Lemuria, people were living supposedly under Mount Shasta, and they had come from some sort of a sunken continent, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
which would be like similar to Atlantis.
Right. It sounds like the same kind of story of Atlantis. Maybe they just called it Lemuria.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that makes you think that can be another show in the future, just about that, because that is interesting. Just the possibility that some sort of a culture of higher technology was around that long ago.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, I agree. Well, there's one more thing. At least one more thing I wanted to mention. Just 5 years ago, or almost 5 years ago, there was a lodge, sweat lodge, near Sedona, Arizona. This was a similar to a New Age situation. The author, the famous author, New Age type of author, James Arthur Ray, he was actually convicted in the deaths of 3 people, and 18 were hospitalized because of the damages or the injuries they suffered in a sweat lodge. And apparently it was really difficult conditions that this author convinced these people to participate in, thinking they were going to have some mystical experience of some kind. But they experience burns and dehydration and breathing and kidney problems. And after this happened, he kind of left, this James Arthur Ray left the area quickly. And he said when they tried to contact him by reporters, he said, or his associates said, he was engaging in prayers and meditation. Now, the problem with this is it puts the whole New Age movement kind of under a negative light, because that's what this information, I remember that being in the news back, you know, 5 years ago, and I remember the negativity associated with it and how this never should have happened and how it, in other words, it just set a very negative light on the New Age movements and sweat lodge type activities. And that was one unfortunate example of the negativity.
Well, just like I was saying about how you know, people will start making stories up if there's a couple of sincere people, and then a bunch of people come in and basically delegitimize the legitimate stories by telling their fake stories. Anytime you know, Sedona, Arizona, another famous kind of mystical spot, it's going to bring people that are trying to take advantage or make money off of other people. And this is obviously one of those examples.
Yes, apparently he charged this author, James Arthur Ray, charged these participants, you know, a pretty fancy price to take part in the activities. And it is unfortunate. And yet, I'm sure the participants, or most of them, were very sincere and very interested in what they were hoping they were going to experience. The same as what you say about people going to Sedona and experiencing the energy associated. I remember when my wife Mary and I went out there many years ago, I remember you telling me about the energy in the rocks in Sedona, and I had not been aware of that at all, but I remember you talking about it before we went out there, when I had told you we were planning on going to visit Sedona.
Yeah, that's definitely another interesting spot. Maybe we can talk about that in the future.
A lot of interesting spots in this country and in this world and universe for us to discuss on mysterious topics.
Okay, well, I guess that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening again, and hope to that you'll be listening in the future. And if you'd like to leave any suggestions or feedback about this or other shows, you can do so at mysterioustopics.com.
Well, thank you. I hope you enjoyed yourselves listening to this podcast. And this is Chuck.
And John.
Goodbye.